Thanks, Stella. Thanks, everyone. And thanks, Jeff. It ends up being, without any pre-planning, it ends up being a nice lead-in from what you talked about and some of the things that I'm going to deal with. As Stella said, I've been with Monsanto for over 20 years, and all of that time in plant breeding, I'm a trained plant breeder. So I tend to have the bias that all the solutions to agriculture's problem lie in genetics, but I know that's not true. In particular, in the part of the world that I like to talk, and we can think of Asia and Africa together, or we can think of smallholder farmers, those types of things. But the limitation in that case is not genetics. There's some certain things that need to be done to get better genetics to farmers sooner, better quality seed, those types of things. But plant breeding programs, and Jeff covered that very well. That work is ongoing. So what I'd like to do is actually share. The last 4 or 5 years, I've had the chance to travel around different parts of Asia and Africa and learn. I spent most of my life, all of my life before that, in North America. So the last several years have been a great opportunity to get more familiar with agriculture as it is in Asia and Africa in general. What you see there is actually pretty high tech for most farmers in that part of the world. I think the numbers that Maiwa shared earlier were from a few years ago, but something like 5 or 10% of farmers had some level of mechanization. It's probably more than that in a few different countries. Within that, China's progressing pretty rapidly in that area. This picture is from China. So I traveled there a couple of years ago, and the cropping system that this is part of is what they call summer corn. So wheat is planted in September or October. Winter wheat goes through the winter, harvested again in June, and the corn is planted directly into the field that you see there, in some cases at least with the equipment that you see there. So I had the chance to go, and we were visiting this farmer because he planted, this was his last day of planting, so it was a nice opportunity to see that happening. But the real reason was that he planted some fields about 10 days ago, and some of those fields were having some plant population or stand or emergence issues. And of course the problem was with the seed and the seed company and bad seed and all that kind of stuff, so they wanted somebody to come and look and see what was going on. And so we went and looked, and we planted corn in that field with the fellow for a while and watched the tractor go up and down and saw the planter operate, and then went to the field that was planted 10 days ago. And you could see long stretches of the row where there were definitely no plants. It was certainly a big problem. There was, 10, 20 feet in a row, no visible plants. And then it would start with some plants with a couple leaves showing and small things growing and stuff like that. And then you'd see another stretch where there would be plants sitting on top of, or seeds sitting on top of the ground. And other areas where there would be missing plants for about that far, and then a double plant here and a double plant there. And it all starts coming together when you see the planter operating and understand what's going on. The planter had no, there was no down pressure on the openers. There was no depth control on the openers either, so the depth of the seed was entirely dependent on the texture of the soil, whether it was compacted or not, whether it was planting. You can see that's pretty heavy residue that's going in, and there was actually combines that went through and harvested that, and there were trucks drove on the field to take the grain, those kinds of things. So there were big stretches of compacted soil where the seed was sitting on top of the ground. In addition, when you look at how the planter's operating inside, the seed plates were old, bent, worn. Some of the pickups for the plates were pushed over or were broken off. And then you look at the seed that was going in, and it was probably good quality seed. I don't think there was a big issue there, but it was of different sizes. So some big seed, some flat seed, some round seed, all those kinds of things were happening in there. So you think of all of that and put it together, and what was happening here was not a seed quality or a genetics issue whatsoever. It was equipment. And this is going to continue to happen I was told that's probably one of the more popular planter models in China. There's three rows there. It plants, and like I said, it's not widespread, but it's moving quickly in China. So those kinds of things will continue to happen until we can learn more about that and share education and do things better about how equipment operates. Like I said, I'm a plant breeder. I'd like it to be a genetics problem, but it's not. There's issues with equipment and know-how and those kinds of things. On another front where it's more manual, something I've got to learn and see firsthand and seen the evolution and actually some great success in, is in some parts of the world, and I guess this is in India and Southeast Asia where I've seen more of it, but farmers would, there's some farming systems where they would typically plant 2 or 3 seeds, this is corn again, per hill. A little hill, some of you know this, you've seen it, you're nodding vigorously. The reason is because the success of that seed that you're putting in is unknown, and it may be a one in, you know, a one-third chance, so you put three of them. And that's probably accurate from experience, that the plant, the seed that went in there, either germination issue or the quality of the plant itself, because it's probably an open pollinated variety and maybe what you planted was a self of some kind or some poor plant. So one of three of those is going to be good. So moving productivity, we've been able to, you know, convince farmers with better quality seed, with hybrid seed, with improved genetics, that they don't need to plant three seeds per hill anymore. One is good. Occasionally, that might not cut it, but if you plant it at the right density and use the right hybrid, that won't matter. The plants on either side will make up for it. So we've seen great improvement in that. And the benefit for the farmer is the seeding rate. It can actually stay about the same. They can increase population but decrease plants per hill, and they get a much more uniform, much more productive crop. When you put this in terms of numbers and look at actual data, there's many hundred data points collected there. This is from five different regions of the Philippines. The farmers' yields are captured with the blue dots, and then where the line goes through is in the similar region, the red dots being what we call technology development. People in more general terms think of it as strip trials before or the same year of first commercialization of a product. So the first time the farmer kind of gets to see a demo plots, if you want, something like that. So certainly on average, in general, more highly managed and more well-maintained than what a farmer would typically do. The inputs are much more certain. We talked about high-quality inputs earlier. You know, we know what's being put onto those plots. So you can see the differences there. The spread is still big. That's partly environmental, partly management, those kinds of things. Within each one, there's a big spread. But the average difference between what the farmers experienced in a given area, and these are not pairwise comparisons, it's not a side-by-side or anything like that, it's just a general geographic region within a particular set of, I think, probably five or six different hybrids. So, but within that geography, the difference between what farmers experienced and what these trials experienced was about 29%, which is, and those yield differences were talked about earlier in different ways. The highest was about 41% in the area where there was a bigger difference. In some, where management is more intense, and that's the one on the left, that was down to about a 14% difference. That difference is very attributable to the management that went into the crop before it. That's largely corn and rice rotation. So the fertility levels are much different. The management of the soil tends to be much more intense. Weed control tends to be much better. So the difference is much more minimized there. In areas where you see a bigger difference, you can find the main contributing factors there are plant population, weed control. There was a lot of data behind this beyond what you're just seeing here. But what they found out with weed control is in that particular area, there was virtually none of the farmers did any pre-plant weed control whatsoever. So you're starting off at a deficit already. And then the timing of when the first weed control happened, what we can share with farmers about when corn kind of determines its yield potential, it's very early on, relatively. And if you have a lot of weeds in the field, as we know, that's going to be reduced. So there's a lot of things with weed control timing and effectiveness. Most of the weed control is by hand. In this case, there are some chemicals used at one point. Excuse me, but a lot of it is by hand. Soil fertility was mentioned earlier. We know that both the amount, the recommendation, and the quality of what's put on is lacking in many cases with farmers here. So and seed bed preparation, both in terms of pre-planting and at planting, seed to soil contact, all of those kinds of things. So they're all factors here, all things that can be controlled. And again, I don't like saying it as a plant breeder, but can be improved by 30% with the same hybrid that you're growing today. We don't need necessarily, a lot of cases there can be updated genetics and you can move from open pollinated varieties to hybrids. That's very true. And we can increase the speed of that. But a lot of the things here are very much to do with things that are within our control and can be shared by education. This is just one example. Again, going back to China, from left to right, you can see the you can't see enough detail of the top picture to know that there's seeds there very evenly placed at a nice depth. You can kind of tell that the seed bed is probably better. Preparation is better, the land's better, what it's going into. And then later on, the same piece of land, somebody's showing, and I don't know, perhaps somebody in the audience can read that for sure better than I can. But what they're showing there is when you did this, this is what happened. And then the pile of ears at the bottom, and then you got this. And then moving on, you know, a slightly rougher seed bed. I think the red boxes that you can kind of see are meant to indicate there's no seed here, what's going on. You can see the plants that come up from that, and then you get that reduced. The numbers below, I can read the numbers, that's the reduced yield in the units that are used there. So you can see the impact of that. And then the bottom one, you can see the red squares are meant to represent where there's no seed again. So this is there. This was in a seed dealer's little shop that I visited in China. And it's there, so farmers can see it. This is what you need to do. This is what the results can be. But again, it's dependent on farmers actually going and seeing that and doing something about it. The big equalizer that I think is making a difference now, because I could have been talking about this 10 years ago, and I'm not sure that much would have been different today. What I believe is happening now and what differences are coming, there's two things. And one of them is this, which I'm sure almost everybody in here has at least one. And most farmers, and the amazing part is, I learned this a couple of years ago, there's more cell phones than there are people in Kenya. So if you think about everybody essentially has access to the information that you can transmit through this. And the other one is cost. Jeff mentioned cost earlier. Cost applies to a lot of what can be transmitted by here. It's not dependent on what geography you're in. Moving a big planter and a big combine to some part of Malawi or wherever it is, for example, is still really difficult. It's still costly. Infrastructure to support it is really limiting in some cases. But how you can get information by this, and how you can improve the technology that farmers have access to, the cost doesn't depend on that anymore, or that's not dependent on cost anymore. So it's equalizing a lot of things. What's up here is kind of a circle diagram of a program that we launched in Malawi, was the first country that it happened, which is seed insurance, you can think of it as. Farmers, for many people here know this, but for those that don't, in a lot of parts of Africa, farmers need to wait. It's kind of the opposite of North America, where we need to wait for the soil to dry out and warm up. Here they have to wait for it to start raining. It needs to go in when the rain comes. Sometimes it doesn't come when they think it did, and they might plant seed too early. That's the start on the left. You buy your seed, you sign up for the program, you share information with the seed dealer that was there. You can register your field, again, using one of these. There's weather data that comes in, and you can see whether the area where my field is in got any rain in the first 3 weeks after planting. Looks like it didn't in the red zone. And then I go out and look at the field, and I can send a picture, and this is what my crop looks like. But, you know, it's big. No farmer is going to be successful with that, no matter what seed they purchased or how good the hybrid was or what kind of equipment they have or anything like that. So they can then go back and say, look, this is what my field looks like. It didn't rain here for 3 weeks even when I planted, and they can get replacement seed. So there's a big, and it had a huge impact the first year because there was a lot of spotty rain. A lot of rain didn't happen in the first couple of weeks. Farmers could go back and get new seed, and they had a crop, actually. Other things, examples of this are, there's a program called FarmRise that's been launched in India, and there's about 4 million users, 4 million farmers. Imagine 4 million farmers that have access now to, and there's about, the latest numbers I got was there about 100 new farmers sign up per day, and there's about 1,000, between 1,000 and 2,000 users on any individual day. And through that, they've got access to weather forecasts, commodity prices, agronomic advice. So instead of that poster being in a seed dealer's shop where the farmer still has to go and see it, it now can be sent by here, and you can recommend, you need to see one, if your feet are 12 inches or 10 inches or whatever, you need to put your foot down and see a seed that far away. Okay, I can get that, I can do it. So there's a lot of examples of how we know what some of the issues are. They're not new. Inputs, understanding, education, quality, equipment, all that kind of thing. But the ability to make farmers aware of that and actually have an impact on it is the thing that is changing today and will continue to change at a rapid pace, I believe. So if I have maybe a couple minutes for questions, Stella. Okay, thank you.